WRZOLP 103.9 FM, Knoxville.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Girl, loved the mess, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo. Oh, let it go, oh God.
This is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. I'm Dotter 5, and we have, as usual, Wombat on the phone with us. Say hello, Wombat.
The Wombat says hello!
There he is. He's coming in now. And this is an atheist talk radio show. We'll talk about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. Conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist and rationalist groups that exist here in Knox Patch, and we'll tell you how you can connect with them later on in the show. And did you know that there was an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville? And has been for over 7 years. Did you know that, Wombat?
Yes, I'm a big fan of the show. I grew up on it, actually.
You are, really? You grew up.
I think, my favorite part was, the original where you're just saving the princess was pretty good, but, like, they got better over time, but when they had the first 3D version, that's my childhood, man. And you collect all 120 stars, and you get, like, mushrooms and everything. It's great!
You must have a different show in mind. This is a talk radio, talk TV show about atheism, free thought, and rationalist groups, and ideas, and they've been doing it for over 7 years. Matter of fact, I just did the show with them yesterday, and it was the 7-year anniversary show. That's at Free Thought Forum TV in Knoxville, Tennessee, on Community Access Television. It comes on every Tuesday from 5 to 6, or pretty much every Tuesday. We get preempted by the Beer Board occasionally. But for the most part, if you tune in at 2 o'clock, I'm sorry, Tuesdays at 5 o'clock on Comcast Channel 12, or just watch it online at ctvknox.com, you can see us. And, let's see, and also, in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are a lot of atheist songs out there. You heard one of them in the intro. And you'll be hearing some more of them here on the program and generally on the station as they are in rotation. Our show is a call-in show. The lines are open. The phone number is 865-333-5937. That's 333-5937 in Knoxville. And feel free to call in anytime and join the conversation. Wombat, your topic today was kind of strange to me. You wanted to talk about angels, is that right?
What? Strange? Yeah. What's strange about angels?
Well, I guess for
especially ones that love to guard you.
Yeah, we talk about religion, religious faith, God's holy books, and superstition. I guess that would fall right in there with them. So what do you want to talk about angels? I mean, what about them?
So let's sober up and talk about something that's going on right now, because I think it'll lead in right into the discussion.
Uh-huh.
Right now in Texas, or lower America, or in the South, Riley, we have a hurricane that's going through. Do you know about that?
Harvey, isn't it?
Hardly? No, oh, did you say hardly? Harvey? Right, we have a Hurricane Harvey. Yep, I'm glad you caught up on it. Cool. Because, so when we have different kinds of category hurricanes, they can cause a lot of damage. They can cause loss of life. And there are even people who aren't in the direct path have experienced floods,
loss of, you know, their own homes, vehicles, means of getting to work, means of powering their homes. And it's a really unfortunate situation for them. And I can't help but feel that as our, you know, our thoughts go out to them, I wanted to consider the people that weren't in the path that feel as if they were protected by some sort of providence or like some sort of guardian angel. And the reason why I bring that up is because I was talking about I was talking to one of my coworkers at work, and she was telling me about how, you know, some of her family members were having problems in the Houston area. And so even that far out. So she was just glad, you know, that they're able to get out of it, and that, you know, she had already an angel looking out for her family. And on top of that, well, I mean, lucky her, right? But I also, we were also talking more about it. And I let the comment pass. It's not a big deal. But I heard her talk about how she had locked herself out of her own home that morning. And it was a pretty interesting story. She basically walked into her car, turned it on because she had a little fob on her, but realized that she didn't have her keys with her. And by the time she tried to go through her purse, she realized it was too late. She had locked the door on the way out and only had her car keys, which is a bad situation. So she basically stayed at her apartment until the landlord came by and let her in. And then I said, oh man, you know what? It's actually probably a good thing that you weren't able to drive to work that morning, because the fog was ridiculous. Again, we had bad weather even up to here, likely not from the Hurricane Harvey, but just still a bad weather pattern in the morning. Visibility was really low and no lights combination whatsoever could have gotten you through it. We were just driving really, really slow on the freeway just to get to work. It was a really dangerous thing. So the less cars on the road, the better. But I told her that, and she brought up, you know what? I said, hey, I'm not really the superstitious type, but I'm glad that, you know, you didn't drive to work at that time. I appreciate that you're safe. And she says, well, I am that type. She says, well, you know, you're right. I am that superstitious kind of type, or not superstitious. She says, I do believe in providence, and I do think there was a reason that I was able to stay home. And I was really, really tempted, you know, to speak up at that point, because we live in a world where people do get in car accidents. We live in a world where people do get, you know, their homes taken away from them, or they're unable to go to work, or their car gets floated away in a sudden storm or a flash flood. And they aren't as lucky. And I would hate to have the mindset that I was any more deserving of providence than they were. Because when I put myself... Exactly. Because then I start putting myself in a position where I don't have to feel as bad for other people because they're not protected by my particular flavor of providence, my guardian angel. What do you think about that? That's what I want to break up in the show. What is the benefit mentally of having a guardian angel behind your back? That's what we're going to talk about on the show today. Larry, take it off. What do you got?
Benefit of having a guardian angel? Well, I mean,
no, dangers.
The dangers. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we all know it. We all know benefits. Mm-hmm. Yeah, free stuff. Good protection, but what comes at the cost?
You might feel sometimes that you, since you have a guardian angel, you could take more chances. You might drive a little more or a little faster, or maybe a little more reckless to work and have more fun because you've got a guardian angel keeping up with you. There's an old joke that says, never drive faster than your guardian angel can fly. Which is an inside joke, you know, religious people like to tell each other. But at the same time, if you feel like you have providence watching after you, then, you know, why not take chances?
Sure. I mean, literally, what can stop you if you have the ultimate powerful providence behind your back?
Mm-hmm.
It can give you a really inflated sense of security that's not necessarily earned. And that could actually lead to not only problems for just you, but your reckless behavior, or supposing that you actually are convinced that this is true, can actually harm others potentially.
Right. And when they do get harmed, you fall into this blame the victim mentality where, you know, you obviously didn't get harmed because you're a good person. They got harmed. They must not be as good a person as you are. And, you know, even though they're just another human being doing the same things you are, you set yourself up as a better person simply because they had bad luck.
Right. I also think if you follow that idiom that you just brought up, that you should never fly faster than or drive faster than your guardian angel can fly.
Uh-huh.
You know, you're on the road. You think that you can take a couple of extra chances. There are other people on that road with you. You know,
right.
if you are convinced that, hey, I'm going to ace this job interview. Maybe you had a family that was wait, and maybe I don't need to prepare as hard, or I got to test them, but I don't need to really study that bad.
Yeah,
there might be people relying on you.
Uh-huh.
People could be relying on you. Your future self could be relying on you. Like it could. There's a lot of different aspects other than just the present you at the present time, and believing that you have an advantage that may not necessarily be justified can lead you into some problems. What else do you think, aside from just reckless behavior, that can be a result?
Well, no, if you feel like you have a guardian angel, then you must feel like he was assigned to you by God, and he was the creator of the universe. So
it's amazing how you're hitting all my points. You're hitting them perfect.
that, you know, that when you believe that the creator of the universe has a special interest in you over other people,
right.
I mean, that's, you're setting yourself for a real hard case of, what is it called? Self-love, or there's another term for it.
Being a jerk.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, and so many of these attitudes that people get when they feel that God is looking out for them, or God is their special friend, or God loves them so much he gave them their only, gave up his only begotten son, is a real cop-out. It's, you know, you are friends with the creator of the universe, and anybody who's not in your church, basically, everybody else in the world, are fallen sinners. And although you may claim humbly that you are too, you get an attitude over them, like, you know, self-righteousness. And that can work against you, and your present self versus your future self or your family or whatever, and because people don't like that. I certainly don't like it.
No,
when people are acting self-righteous around me.
From the outside, no one loves it, and I can't tell you how many times I've seen, in a nation where the paradigm is that being religious is a good thing, particularly if you're Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And, there tends to be an almost institutionalized benefit, or I guess an advantage, with people who are Christian that can say, hey, well, you know what, I believe in God, blah, 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 or last time I went to church, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, even as an atheist, I feel like I have to be really hesitant with how I bring up conversations or what I plan to do, or how
especially
I describe myself.
Especially as an atheist in a religious world.
Yeah, particularly with one with, like, Christian bosses who were happily saying, like, I like Tim Tebow, I like his faith. I'm like, okay, you don't really like his faith, you just like the fact that it matches your faith.
Right.
But the concept here is, you know, the privileged position is what I'm really describing. The position of privilege where you feel like you have God on your side, or you have an advantage that you haven't really perceived as absolutely unfair compared to the fact that most people wouldn't have a guardian angel on their side if they didn't share your exact same faith.
Right.
Yeah, I think a good example of this is the story that I brought up in the beginning. Like, you have this lady who got locked out of her home, couldn't drive to work, and as a result thought she was being protected by a guardian angel.
Uh-huh.
Meanwhile, literally every other person at work got there through that road, and, you know, whether we got there safely or not, it didn't seem like we were have the benefit of a miraculous key being lost, or unable to start our car, or unable to find, you know, our shoes to leave the door. And I know a couple of listeners might say, well, you know, maybe the fact that the guardian angel stopped her stopped a massive car crash that would have rendered all of us.
Well, yeah, you can spin it any way you want to. I mean, people
sure,
generally
you truly
do.
Can.
It's rationalization.
But the problem like that is we're working with a being that has ultimate control and works in mysterious ways, which ultimately means in ways we don't know or understand, but yet has absolute power control. Why put us in the situation where there are people that do get in accidents in the fog, where there are people that drown in flash floods or die in hurricanes?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the choice, if it's based on my God loves me and he wants to protect me no matter what, it seems to be based on almost random chance, or at least chances exactly coinciding with the statistics of whether or not you're likely to die in really dangerous circumstances. And the position of privilege that people have when they say, I have a God looking out for me, or I have a guardian angel looking out for me, tends to be wholly unjustified when you look at the data, when you look at the number of people that actually do get hurt in situations like that. And the worst part is, you never hear from the people that do die who believe a guardian angel is looking out for them.
Right.
Because they're just taken out of the equation.
Yeah.
And all you're left with are the people who are absolutely more and more so confident that they'll survive until they don't.
Right. And then the believers, the friends of the people who do die, give, you know, religious excuses too. You know, like, I needed another angel. You know, he's in heaven now with Jesus. I wish I was with him, that type of thing. It's just, God can do no wrong. Everything he does is for a reason, and even though it may be mysterious, it's still for us, the good of us all. And there is no losing when you're talking about God in a religious version. What gets me is, you know, once they find out you're an atheist, a lot of times they'll call you arrogant. You think you can go through life, you know, by yourself without God? How arrogant is that? But then if you think about it, these people think that the creator of the universe has a deep and abiding love for them and listens to every word they say in their head and will do basically anything that they ask. What arrogance?
Yeah, or basically assigned a personal assistant from heaven's gate itself to follow you around as you tweet on your phone and check your stocks and vacuum your house to make sure every single thing in your life is perfectly safe just for you.
Right. And if it's not, it's for a reason that God personally had you in mind for that reason. How could that anything be possibly be more arrogant than thinking that?
You know, it's part of the hypocritical nature of, you know, a person who's willing to point at others and say things are wrong with them without really examining their own position. I was having a conversation with my mom about this a while back ago. She's an ardent believer. She's a Jehovah's Witness.
Mama
and
Wombat.
She was telling me, Mama Wombat. I was trying to have a productive conversation. But it ultimately determined through some masking, through some simple questioning that she didn't really care about what was true. She just cared about what was comfortable. When I explained that to her, she told me, basically I asked her if she was willing to change position at all based on like any kind of evidence. And she says, absolutely not, if it makes me change my religion. I'm like, do you care if your religion is true? She says, absolutely, I care it's true. And I said, even if you care if it's true, you wouldn't be willing to give it up if given, like, factual information? She says, absolutely not.
Yeah.
She's absolutely loyal. And then at that point, she doesn't really care if it's true or not.
Right.
When I try to explain that to her, she says, I'm closed-minded because I don't want to listen to more reasons of what she believes rather than why she believes.
But you've been listening to them all your life. It's not like you don't listen to them.
Yeah, to the point.
You have heard them all.
To the point. Right. But to get that statement of me being closed-minded when she herself will describe it herself as someone who doesn't care about what's true was a pretty interesting pretty interesting story to listen to.
It's an irrational dichotomy of thought that she's built together.
It is, but if you have if your foundation of your arguments are rational, you shouldn't be surprised to get like an irrational response like that. But let's do examine ourselves for a little bit. Let's do take that time. How could we determine if we were being irrational? Like, how would we even go about that? Let's make sure we're not falling underneath the same hypocrisy. So I ask you this: how do you know you're not being irrational right now? And I'll see if I can test your answer.
I don't know what you mean by right now. I'm just sitting here. you have to give an example.
So you think you have a reasonable position to not believe in God?
I do.
Why do you think supports that?
You have to define God. And I guess most people listening to this broadcast are thinking the Christian God. And, there are so many contradictions in it. Like he's supposed to know everything in the world that had ever happened before, now, and later. But he didn't know that Adam and Eve were going to eat the apple. I mean, where was he at the time that they were being tempted by the snake? I mean, he's omniscient.
So the reason why you don't believe
he's supposed to be everywhere.
The reason why you don't believe in God.
He's supposed to be everywhere at once, but he was totally absent at the most vulnerable time in the history of man. What the heck is going on there? And why would he even put a tree of knowledge in the middle of the garden if he didn't want them to eat of it? He could have put it on the moon. He didn't have to put it there.
Are you saying the belief, you don't believe in the Christian God because of contradictions in the Bible, like written down in the
Not only that, there's a whole raft of ideas. David Hume
said... What would you
say
is the best one?
Well, David Hume said 250 years ago that we know that people lie, fabricate stories, and are fooled and misrepresent the truth. And we know that happens all the time. It's a character of man. However, if you were to believe in a miracle story, let's say, you would have to believe that you would give more credence to the fact that the laws of nature were bent or broken than that somebody either made up a story, was mistaken, or fooled. And, you know, that it doesn't make any sense that miracle exists. And the Christian Bible is founded on miracles. The very miracle that Christian faith, the one miracle is the, you know, somebody returning being dead after being totally dead for like 3 days. And that doesn't happen. I mean, we have people die for a few hours on an operating table.
Operating table.
But they're being fed, blood and oxygen and several other things at the time. They may have their heart stop, but they're not gone. They're not dead.
So, let me position this. Let me ask you this question. Mm-hmm. Are you saying because the Bible describes things that's never happened before?
Well,
that's the reason why you don't believe it?
Well, that's two things. I could go on and on. Matter of fact, I've written a whole book on this stuff. I think that God.
What do you think is the most important reason that justifies a position to whether or not you should believe in something?
Oh,
what do you think?
Evidence.
What?
You know, if you don't have evidence for it, then you're not justified in believing it.
I like that answer the best. Mm-hmm. But why is that the best answer?
Evidence is everything. I don't know where I picked that phrase up, but it works. Evidence is everything when you're talking about belief.
Well, you know, a Christian could say, hey, point to their book and say, hey, this is my evidence. Mm-hmm. I got evidence right here. So what's the difference between their evidence and say,
you gotta think of evidence as from an atheist perspective. We've got 10,000 people all over the world pointing to a different holy book. You know, their holy book and saying, no, this one's the correct one. It's full of miracles too. And why would I pick one out of all the others when they all claim, contradictory things? I mean, they can't all be right, but they can all be wrong.
So, well, at what point are you justified in saying that this book is right? What would turn the tables on your decision of saying, hey, this holy book has demonstrated that it's correct. What changes that?
Well, evidence. I mean, but the evidence is not coming forth. It's not forthcoming. I mean, people bring arguments to you instead of evidence. They say, well, God created the universe. Look at the universe. There it is. You know, God has to exist. Well, of course, not demonstrated the very first claim.
You're not just saying evidence as in things that you can put down a list. You're talking about, like, demonstrable tests, independent studies that can determine through reliable methods that this thing actually occurred or that this thing existed.
Right.
Not things that are just like affidavits given by people 2,000 years ago who may not have been the people who were written in the Bible.
You wouldn't even believe it. If your mother came to you, Mama Wombat, and said, and went out and went outside and saw and said that there was a pink elephant, about the size of a Pinto car on your front lawn.
Okay.
And wanted you to come out and look at it, and you came out and looked at it, and it wasn't there. Your own mother, I doubt that you'd believe her. I mean, you know the person, you've known her all your life. You know, it's the claim, if the claim is outlandish, or a fantastic claim, then the evidence has to be that much better for a fantastic claim.
Or a more concise way of saying that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
Right.
Basically, you gotta walk whatever you talk. You gotta be able to show up whatever you put up. Cause at a certain point, I'm willing to believe you if it's something mundane. Like if you told me, hey, there's an insect ant on your front yard. I'm like, okay, sure, maybe there is one. Maybe there's thousands of them. I don't really care.
Yeah.
But if you told me, hey, there's an ant that can sing Michael McDonald's What a Fool Believes and he's doing it right now to a concert full of toads.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm gonna need more than just your saying that to believe it. I'm gonna have to see that myself. And I'm going to need a lot more evidence because I know sometimes videos can be faked. And if it looks cartoony, I'm going to pick that apart because this is something that would fundamentally change my worldview. And I like to have reliable beliefs. And in order for me to believe that, I can't just be willing to take you on the word of it because you might lie to me in the future or you could be lying to me right now. I need to be able to test what you say if it's that extraordinary.
Well,
there's a limit, and I think we all have that.
Well, there's another aspect to this. It's not just that people are coming to you and saying that God is real, Jesus is real, and you have to believe it. It usually doesn't end there. Then they want you to go to church. They want you to tithe. They want you to toe the Ten Commandments. They want you...
the bottom line is always tithe, right? The bottom line is the money.
But it's a list of demands. I mean, if your mother came in and said there was a pink elephant on the front yard, and you could say, okay, great, and believe her because you didn't want to hurt her feelings, or say that you believed her because you didn't want to hurt her feelings, because there's no cost involved. But once you get into religion, boy, the costs never stop. The misogyny, the foregoing of medical procedures for your children in some cases.
I'm gonna make a point and just say that even if I said I believed her just to make her not feel bad, it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm convinced that it's true.
Right.
It just means that I said it. I can't really choose what I believe, but I can make a statement to help other people's feelings not get
And
hurt.
That's another,
I can't control what I'm convinced is true or not.
Right. And that's another thing about Pascal's wager when they bring it to you. They come to you and say, you know, if you believe in God, you die, you go to heaven. But if you're an atheist and you don't believe in God and you die and God is real, then you go to hell. Well, the thing about it is, you cannot turn belief on and off like a light bulb. You can't just say, oh, okay, well, you're right. You've convinced me. I believe in God now. It doesn't work that way. God is omniscient, theoretically. He would be able to, he would know that you're not really believing, that you're just saying that you believe to get past the bet. And that would take an awfully gullible God if it actually did get past him, and he's not supposed to be gullible.
So let's focus on this. Not only is God omniscient, because we're going to assume that's true, because I think that in itself is a paradox. But let's consider the actual thing where someone in heaven is assigned the guardian angel position and is spending their time on earth, like outside of paradise, helping some dude, find his keys in the morning, or get to work and maybe talk to the girl who he's always nervous around, or walk away from a pink can that's about to fall on his head. What does it say about God's plan? Like, what does it say about how control the Lord is that he's delegating basically his omnipotence basically to, I guess, employees of heaven who can't stay in heaven?
Yeah.
What does it say about heaven that most people, I don't know if you're getting paid for it, so I imagine it's a volunteer position. I don't know if money exists in heaven, but if you're volunteering to leave the heaven, what does that really say about how great heaven is in the first place? It's like, I know this is paradise, but I'd rather hang out with Dan right now for a little bit. Is that an opportunity? Yeah, join the list. Yeah.
We haven't even talked about
it. It doesn't seem
prayer.
Like a good gig.
We haven't even talked about prayer yet, but we need to, and we first need to go into a break. This is the bottom of the hour.
Half hour already.
It is. And this is WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM, Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. We're here every Wednesday at 7 o'clock. And this is Doubter 5 and Wombat. We're going to take about a 5-minute break and play a song for you. I had a song lined up just a second ago. Sunday in Reality by Cynthia Carl. And we'll be back in just a few minutes.
I come to the garden alone. There's a strange looking guy by the tree. He's talking to someone, but nobody's there. This creeps me out, so I flee. I pick up some Cheetos and a Mexican beer and head home where my books wait for me. I get crumbs in the bed and annoy my companion. That's Sunday in reality. Sunday in reality. Sunday in reality. No prophets, no preachers, no prophets. cross-legged teachers, just Dawkins, Sam Harris, and me. Most of my friends really seem to exist. I don't think they're imaginary. There's one on the couch since his wife threw him out, and that Sunday in reality. On a hill far away stood an old rugged cross, so I called up the ACLU. There was screaming and hate mail and death threats and such. It was clearly the right thing to do. If the faithful had faith, would they jam all those crosses into hilltops to force you to see? No, they'd softly and tenderly call you to join them that Sunday in reality. Sunday in reality. Sunday in reality. No prophets, no preachers, no cross-legged teachers, just Dawkins, Sam Harris, and me. I have guilt, I have shame, but it's all in my name. No one dies for my sins except me. And I'm not off the hook for a few Hail Marys, and that's Sunday in reality. Sunday in reality. Sunday in reality. No prophets, no preachers, no cross-legged teachers, just Dawkins, Sam Harris, and me. I get this weird feeling I'm not being watched. I get this weird feeling I'm free. Come up to the house and we'll jam after dinner that Sunday in reality. Sunday in reality.
You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on Wozo 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
And we're back. This is Daughter 5. We have Wombat on the phone. Hello, Wombat.
The Wombat is back!
Now, let's talk about the free thought groups that are here in Knoxville. I promised at the earlier in the show, at the opening, that I would talk about some of them. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville. It has about 730 members now. It's a fast-growing group. It was founded about 15 years ago. This November would be 15 years. You can find them online at KnoxvilleAtheist.org. They also have a meetup site, which is where most of the action takes place. So go to meetup.com and look for Knoxville Atheists. It's just that simple. Or you can join us in person. Imagine that. Go to our our weekly meetup that happens every Tuesday evening at West Hills Taps and Flats on Kingston Pike near Westtown Mall, where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everybody is welcome as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, dribble for punch. Thank you, Matt Dillon. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville is the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around longer than ASCE has, and they've been around nearly 20 years or over. RET has bi-weekly presentations that happen on the first and third Sundays of every month. There are discussions and roundtable discussion presentations. They meet at the Goins Administration Building, Cafeteria Annex, and if that's too much to remember, just go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events. And when you go on campus the first and third Sunday, just follow the signs to the meeting. Then there is the Sunday Assembly. It started in England just a few years ago and has spread around the world. It's a no-God church for those who have had enough of religion and no longer believe, but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. They only meet once a month, however, and that's on the fourth Sunday. They meet downtown in the International Building, adjacent to the World's Fair Park. And then there's the Secular Student Alliance, which has programs that give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school or college student who would like to be involved in the free thought movement, or would just like to find other free thinkers to hang with. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no different.
Founder 5, I need help. What? I need help. What? I'm a lonely, lonely wombat. Listen, I've been playing this game with the princess for ages. If I only had someone in my life to play with me so that we can collect those mushrooms together and live forever, defeating that dragon and getting those fire things that make you shoot fireballs, like awesomeness. It's so good. You got anything like that for me?
I can't help you with that. But if you're looking for other noxful atheists to hang with, you can always go to the Atheist Society of Knoxville and meet with them every Tuesday at West Hills Taps and Flats. That's for happy hour, basically, for food, drink, and conversation. You get there about 5:30 or 6 and stay till whenever.
I need everybody's romance welcome. In my life. Is there anything out there for me?
Romance.
You need something. Yes!
Well, I don't really
know. I'm a romantic heart.
There are atheist single sites out there, but I certainly don't know much about them, having been married for a long time.
Okay.
You know, you can always start your own group. Matter of fact, if you're in a town that doesn't have an atheist group or a dating group, go to meetup.com and start one. You will soon have a few friends that will help you get along. Okay, we said we were going to talk about the TV show. It's called Free Thought Forum, and you can see it every Tuesday between 5 and 6 on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. If you don't have cable, you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. You can also find archives of some of those shows on YouTube, where a fan has been posting them. Just search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville, and you'll find a whole bunch of 7 years worth, actually, of shows. Also, if you're interested in getting involved with the TV or the radio show, you can just come to an Ask Meetup, that's Atheist Society of Knoxville, or RET, Rationalists of East Tennessee, and talk to us about it, too. Could be our next co-host or guest. Also, the phone number here, the lines are open. You can join our conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 333-5937. And that's about it for the announcements. What were we going to get into after the break?
You were going to talk about prayer.
Prayer, yes. Thing about prayer, we were talking about arrogance and being able to talk to the creator of the universe and all that. You know, that every word you speak in your mind is then heard by the omnipotent, omnipresent being who's the most powerful.
That's a lot of omnis.
Yeah, it is. It's an omni-god. But the thing about it is, there's a video on YouTube which is pretty good. It's kind of struck a nerve with me in that. You know, all the answers that you get for your prayers, the church will tell you is that God says either yes, no, or wait. And that will work in any situation, whether you're praying to the omnipotent God of the universe or to Joe Pesci or a mug of milk. You know, the answer will always be yes, no, or wait. And your odds of getting what you ask for, they're no better than the odds of sheer chance. But one thing I would like to mention about prayer is it's really nothing more than witchcraft or magic. If you think about it, you're using ritualized words to call on a supernatural being who lives in another dimension, basically, to come into this dimension and do your bidding. Prayer is basically witchcraft, but it's a white witchcraft. It's a witchcraft that society I guess proves on if you're a religious person.
Well, what's wrong with witchcraft, though?
Well, it's supernatural. It depends on the supernatural, which.
But it's so useful.
Well, the thing about it is,
if you're in a rough spot, hey, check it out. If you can like call on an all-powerful demon or succubus to help you out.
Well, the thing about it is, it says in the holy book that if you practice witchcraft, you should be put to death. You know, seek out witches,
well,
find the witches and kill them, huh?
But it also says in the holy book that they should call on that God whenever you need him.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. It's contradictory. They're telling you basically to perform witchcraft, but if you find a witch, you should kill them. Which is
weird. Oh, I see a problem there.
But a lot of us do have superstitions. I know that early in my life I had lucky things that I carried. I always wore a lucky shirt. You know, if I was going to a baseball game as a what do you call them?
Is that why no one sat next to you? Because you never washed it? You never washed it?
What?
Did you ever wash it?
What?
Your lucky shirt.
Oh, pictures of you. I did. My mom did. She made sure.
Okay, okay. Yeah. Okay.
But you've got lucky things too, don't you?
Of course I do. I got, I know this sounds silly. I have a lucky PowerPoint template. It's the same one I use when I ever give a public presentation. I was lucky enough to use it during my thesis defense, but I used it during like my candidacy exam. I've used it or mostly during every class presentation. In fact, when I did my, presentation on some research, to the ASK members or the Atheist Society in Knoxville, I use that same template. But I also feel like there's some, you know, actual benefits beyond it being supernaturally lucky, which it doesn't really carry a lot of merit with it anyway.
Yeah.
It's just a really nice contrast PowerPoint, and it tends to animate and display things in a way that I can predict, and it makes it so that I can interchange slides that I have on different subjects easily, because I don't have to reformat it. It's all the same template. Yeah. So as a result, it's a really, really handy thing to have, and it stands out pretty well.
Yeah. You know what's funny about that?
Yo.
You know what's funny about that is it's not a physical thing. I mean,
it's not a physical thing.
It's not something you can hold in your hand.
It's data.
It's data, but I mean, it's not like you can take it out of the computer and carry it around in your pocket.
No, it only makes sense in a particular confirmation.
Yeah. So
I can understand that.
Yeah. So, and I just thought that was kind of funny in that it's non-physical, but we still think of them as lucky when most everything else, like a rabbit's foot or a shirt or something like that, is a physical object. Strange how things morph like that.
Well, what is it? I mean, it's ultimately just something that makes me feel more comfortable.
Uh-huh.
And if there's like a tangible reason why, whether it has a really good contrast or, my cat wants to play fetch with me. That's the squeaking in the background. But if you've determined that it has a high utility, then continue using it. I don't know why a lucky shirt is lucky. Why did you fall under that?
Oh, I had wore it a couple times in the Cubs, not Cub Scouts, but Little League, when our team won. You know, that type of thing.
Okay, but I guess what it means is it's a comforting thing, and I think with a guardian angel, going back to the topic of the show, it's ultimately something that just gives a person comfort. It's comforting to know that there's someone looking out for you. But here's the interesting thing. We're always happy, or at least you can see in the case where people who are claiming guardian angels are helping them, that here's God who had a plan for me, and that plan involved this specific angel helped me out in circumstances where I absolutely needed him or her, or some sort of providential force. But you never see them blame the system when it goes awry. When something bad happens, or when something slips through the crack, you never see someone say, dang it, my guardian angel's having a bad day, he's really screwed me up today. He totally got me scolded by my boss, he should have really protected me from that banana peel. Or that dragon who was in between me and the princess, he jumped and I ended up losing my last life, and now I can't play the game anymore because it says game over.
You can just imagine a wide receiver in the end zone blessing out there, or cursing out there, a guardian angel when they drop the ball.
You never see that.
No,
you never
see
them fumble and be like, dang it, guardian angel, you totally should have had my back. Yeah. I hate this system.
They always thank God or Jesus.
You're fired.
But they never blame him when things go wrong.
They never blame him.
Yeah.
What is up with that? So I don't know what you would call that, but it does seem to be related to confirmation bias. Do you have an idea what that could be?
Right. Do I have an idea why?
Did I hit on the note?
Oh,
yeah,
no, because...
Do you have a better term for why that is?
Well, we've been taught. I was raised as a Southern Baptist, and, you know, all my life growing up, if things didn't go right, then it was God's plan that we do something else, that we go in a different direction. It was never because God failed. It was always, you know, just either our fault or God had a different plan. God is mysterious. It's never God that fails. Even though the Bible is full of things where he did fail at. Go ahead.
This isn't a matter of confirmation bias, then. I think you just illuminated the subject. This is a situation where you have an unfalsifiable claim.
Right.
If your claim is, God is looking out for me, and something good happens to you, then it proves to you that God is looking out for you. But if something bad happens to you, and you interpret it as, well, that's just God protecting me from something else, or, well, this is just part of God's bigger plan, something else is going to happen to me that'll be so much better that'll offset this downturn. You put yourself in the position where whether something good happens to you or there's something not good happens to you, you're willing to hold the same conclusion. And as a result, you don't really know when you'll get a bum rap or when you get a dud in your experiment because you set yourself where every result is a positive result.
Uh-huh.
And a problem with a situation like that is it's not a very justifiable position.
Right. Well, and you can
see, never given.
You can see where it might have originated with the early priests and preachers, you know. They're the ones who supposedly represent God. And if he says that we need to go over here and fight this army or you know, do this to plant crops and the crops fail or the army loses, you know, it wasn't God that was wrong, especially since he represents God. It had to have been the army or it had to have been the weather or it had to have been something else. So it could never, ever be the fault of the God. And that has just come down the timeline to us as infallibility.
What it is a classic heads I win, tails you lose situation.
Right. Uh-huh.
Where I set up the game to no matter what, I will, one person will benefit and the other person is set to lose from the get-go.
Uh-huh.
And like I said, the problem with a situation like that is it's not one that's based on trying to determine true things. It's one based on telling an explicit narrative. And that narrative is, God is good, don't worry about anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether something good happens to you or something bad happens to you, stick to the narrative. And the problem is, that doesn't set you up for determining things that are true or figuring out the best, most reliable way to determine things that are around you. And if you care about things that are true, you'd be willing to point that out to yourself and be willing
how
to
much
try
do
to
you
figure
care
out something
about
else
truth?
Out.
Yeah, that's what it boils
down to. Are you willing to have an evidence-based belief? Or one that just confirms to a narrative of God being good no matter what.
Yeah. H.P. Lovecraft has a saying that I like to quote. It says, if you sincerely feel that your religion is true, why do you try to brainwash your children into it? Just tell them to seek the truth. If it's true, they'll find it. If it's not, they won't. And wouldn't you rather them not know? I mean, wouldn't you rather them not find it if it wasn't there? You know, that type
of thing. Sure, I can tell. Well, I mean, I can tell you the main reason why anyone teaches their kid why they should be religious in a particular religion is because their parents did the same thing for them.
Well, sure.
And they're basically just trying to emulate the best way they know how to be a good parent by doing basically what their parent did. We need to break that cycle, or we need to be willing to. And I think we're seeing that happen. What we're doing is we're building a culture where we have too many people nearby each other saying the same thing but pointing at different gods.
Uh-huh.
And as a result, kids are growing up realizing they can't all be true. They may live in a very closeted shelter, but if they have internet access, they have little excuse to know, hey, I'm beginning to understand, I'm beginning to have questions, I'm beginning to wonder how the universe is actually made, or why it's good to say I don't know at certain times, or why it's comfortable to have doubt, or why it's good to be a skeptic. They're learning that even if they stay as a Christian, you see Christianity as a result becoming far more modern, being far more accepting, welcoming gays, claiming themselves to be progressive, holding stances where if this is 200 years ago, a Christian today would have been pulled out of church, maybe dragged through the streets. But it's a result of the fact that people are becoming more aware that the position of God is good, don't listen to anything else, isn't going to be satisfactory to bring in new generations or fill up the pews.
Yeah.
They're opening themselves up as a result of becoming more accepting to secular morals.
Yeah, but the problem is that the books don't change.
Go for it.
The problem
is what did you say?
The books do not change.
Books don't change, but you can read certain parts of the books.
Yeah, but the society becomes more or less progressive as the society grows away from or back to the teachings of the book. Look at the Middle East during the 60s and 70s. You know, they were a very progressive society. They had the same book. They were just, you know, they were looking at it with a critical eye and moving away from it and becoming more progressive, more liberal. But then the Muslim Brotherhood, you know, read the book literally and enforced it. And now you've got a Middle East that has gone back to pretty much the 6th century. And this is the same as can happen to Christianity. The books don't change.
Courtesy of the CIA. Thank you.
Whatever. But the books are barbaric. And we learn to move away from them, move back to them. But in my estimation, we've got to discredit them. They deserve to be discredited.
But you are illustrating a key point, and that is something that's very important, in that even though the books stay the same, people have the capacity to change. People have the capacity to change for the good as well as the bad. But overall, we can work towards the good. And we have the past set in front of us. That's one of the benefits now. We know that secular morality is one of the best forms of morality because it's what the best forms of morality are based on. For example, when we say, hey, don't do this, we don't say don't do this because our giant God in the sky doesn't like it. We say don't do this because we need to be mindful of the consequences of our actions. We have objective goals as a society, and we've all agreed that these are our goals that we want, and this action inhibits our ability to do these goals on an objective standard. And we can compare different actions and how well they relate to meeting our goals as a healthy, well-meaning society that values good health, good well-being, and good standings among people in terms of respect, order, and tolerance with different kinds of mindsets. You don't get that from a religion, and we know that. So we have a path, and we're working towards that. And we see as people become more further apart from their holy books, they fall more in lines with a secular morality mindset to the point where you can be more comfortable talking about, hey, this is my belief and it's different from yours. But we can have a productive conversation. Maybe we can be friends. It's not out of...
We do have a standard. It's harm. Do no harm. Like the Hippocratic Oath, you know, the first line, you know, first do no harm. You don't need a God to tell you to do that. It's common sense. It's where societies are built on. We're social creatures. We need to be able to get along and to be able to form societies that support human thriving. And the first rule is don't do any harm to your fellow man. And that would go to include physical harm, emotional harm, financial harm. I mean, that could be the one commandment that doesn't require a God to give to you. It's just something you should be able to figure out yourself.
It would definitely summarize a big part of the Ten Commandments instead of the first four, which are like, hey, don't have any God over me. I'm really, really awesome. Check out my Tumblr at god.tumblr.com. I'm amazing.
Uh-huh.
You know, there are things where you can really appreciate the idea of secular morality as in do no harm, work hard at what you do, and, you know, have fun, because this is maybe the one life that you have left. You might as well enjoy it the best way you can, and if you can do it in a way that doesn't cause harm to other people. Exactly. You can do so many good things if you're willing to set your mind to something, stay motivated, and not try to cause harm unnecessarily to people. It can be done. And we're doing it, I think. I think today is better than any other day in human history, and it's the result of the fact that we've learned from our mistakes in our past, and we're willing to move forward. And if we can do this together, Christians included, we can make this an incredible world to be in. We can make heaven here right now. Right. We don't have to wait until we die. Let's try to go for that.
And you can look at some secular societies that exist today that are having a very good progressive society. The Scandinavian countries, Norway, Holland, Denmark,
Sweden.
Japan is not a religious, they have religions there, but they're generally secular. Even China is a generally secular country. So we have good examples of that now. Why do we have to fight each other over invisible religious entities when, you know, we can just support each other and try to make the world a better place?
Exactly. I mean, you can even add Britain to the list. They have a state church.
Uh-huh.
But most of the large majority of people are, exactly. I wouldn't say most. Well, I don't know. I really don't know that statistic, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah. But
Britain,
I mean,
for sure.
Most of them are secular.
When they hear, like, hear about, like, how science is taught in schools in America, they bolt. They're like, what? You guys still teach that? What's going on in America?
Right.
Like, you guys are a superpower. Get your stuff together, because obviously this isn't true.
Yeah.
And some of the most brilliant minds, at
even
least
Australia
from, you know,
had
science
a,
perspective,
recently
atheist
had a,
perspective,
yeah.
definitely.
Australia, one of the recent prime ministers was an atheist, an out-atheist.
Nice.
So, I mean, their country didn't, like, collapse in on itself, you know.
Right. And even, like, we got close to presidential candidates being open about the fact that, you know, they might be secular-minded in a lot of things, whereas early speeches with Barack Obama, where he mentions that, you know, as much as he played the game when he was president, you can find speeches on YouTube where he's like, you know, the most important thing isn't our Christian values, it's our secular values. And even Bernie Sanders was pretty open about his secular Jew perspective, which tends to be the most common perspective among Jews in America today. They aren't the ones like honoring Shabbat or anything like that.
Yeah.
They're, for the most part, just kind of jaded little dudes or jaded guys.
Yeah.
You know, really, really cool dudes. And they're just like, nah, I'm not really into all that. But yeah, I know, I know there's a cultural history that's really significant to me. And I'm going to stick to that because I think it's important, but I'm not going to let it define how I see reality. And I think that's a really, really cool way of doing it, actually. So, like, just because you switch from being a believer to a non-believer doesn't mean you give anything up. You can still have the things that you value. You can still have holidays, family, friends, all that stuff. You can still have communion. But you can improve your ability to understand how reality works at the same time. And why deny yourself that?
Yeah, it's not like we don't have purpose in life. We just determine our own purposes in life. And they can change from year to year.
Exactly.
It's better than having some organization dictate the purpose of your life for you. You know, it's one of the most important things that you can do in your life. We're getting very close to the end of the program. Would you like to have a final word or anything before we go?
Sure. I've been thinking about this. There's a show called Adam Ruins Everything. They just released an episode where the premise of the show is he likes to show people are doing wrong things. And he shows a lot of misconceptions in society, and he does it in a really funny way. But he just released an episode where he showed how he made mistakes even in the previous season. And the premise of the show was, it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to question everything.
Right.
Because the most best thing that can happen is you can change your mind. So I challenge the audience, question everything you know. And if you're lucky, you might just change your mind on a couple of things.
Yeah, you might find an actual truth that you didn't know.
Yeah.
And we're going to end the program.
Awesome.
Yeah. We're going to end the program now. This is Doubter 5, and we got Wombat in there. Say bye, Wombat.
Wombat!
And we'll be back next week, 7 o'clock, Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. Remember, everybody's going to some other religion's hell. Don't sweat it. The time to worry about is when we prove that souls and heavens and hells are real. And until then, not worth the sweat. And we'll see you next week, 7 o'clock, Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. Doubter 5 out.
Bye! Cool! I thought it was a good show. I'll get these audio episodes out. I had them working yesterday. but the fan audio, I wanted to get a better sample of it, and I spent too long trying to get it perfected. But I can get that out, and I can get this episode out today too. Well, not today, but I'll definitely be this weekend, maybe around Thursday. I'll get that done.
Game over.
You've been listening to Digital Free Thought.
Cool.
Hour.
All right. See you, Larry. Have a good one. Drive safe. Bye.